It's 6 Eastern, 3 o'clock Pacific.
To give up our own oil and gas and buy the energy that we need from countries that hate us. So those countries that hate us will have more money to buy weapons to try to kill us.
Coast to coast and around the world from the America Out Loud Talk Radio studios.
Now, I realize you can't fix stupid, but you can vote it out.
It's time for Truth Be Told with Booker Scott.
I'm going to quickly jump into the show here tonight, and welcome to the weekend, by the way. It's Friday, thank goodness for that. And I guess we're officially into spring now, and thankfully we made it through another Joe Biden dark winter of death. I'm Booker Scott. This is The Truth Be Told on America Out Loud Talk Radio, and this hour is brought to you by Gold Co. Just go to BookerLikesGold.com to find out about buying precious metals. That's BookerLikesGold.com. Last month, I had Mel Witte as a guest here, and she did some great work on bringing you the Letitia James story on how James had spent about $400,000 on air travel, hotels in places like Hollywood and Puerto Rico, thousands of dollars in food, and how it all came from her campaign donations. Well, Mel is back, and she is revealing some really interesting information about former Congressman Adam Kinzinger. We'll get into that in just a second. Also, do you ever wonder if we are living in the biblical end times? Is that what's going on? Is the end close? Well, Dr. Willie Rice will be here to answer those questions as best as he can. He is a doctor of theology, and I'm pleased to have him to answer those questions. Those questions are above my pay grade. Want to welcome back into the program now someone that was here just a few weeks ago. She did great work on Letitia James, finding out exactly where all of her campaign expenditures are going. You may remember that story. It got great traction, really went around the internet. I appreciate everybody for sharing that information. But she is back with us now because she does great research. She's a small business owner and a political scientist. And right now, Adam Kinzinger, the former congressman from Illinois, got under her skin, and she did some digging on that. We're going to find out what she found. Mel, welcome back to the program.
Hi, Booker. Thank you for having me.
It's good to talk to you. And, you know, I know your buddy Adam Kinzinger is one of your favorites. And that's complete sarcasm, by the way. I do speak sarcasm.
Yeah, he is actually, I think, like I told you yesterday, if I had to close my eyes and pick one, he's the one more than anyone that gets under my skin.
Even more than Liz Cheney?
I mean, it is very close. Yeah. It is very close. But yep, even more, it's the smugness with Kinzinger that...
I think Liz Cheney has that as well. There's an ego and a narcissistic attitude that looking down her nose at people, and she knows better than everybody else. But I think he's the same way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but Liz Cheney, there's an entitlement there. I think she thinks she's some kind of Republican royalty, you know. Not in my book, though.
No, not so. Mine either. And not in most people's that are on the right side or conservative. Mm-hmm. And you could see that the way Hageman beat Liz Cheney in a primary in 22. It was 75% to 25%. It wasn't even close. So even the people in the state realized what Liz Cheney was and was no longer representing them, probably representing the Democrats more. And yesterday when we were talking, you mentioned that Adam Kinzinger was your least favorite in the House of Representatives. And I threw out the names of Dan Goldman and Jamie Raskin because they have to be at the top of my list. And of course, they're Democrats and you're picking out the Republicans. But let's get into Adam Kinzinger. A little groundwork here. He had 5 terms in Congress from the state of Illinois, and then the lines were redrawn after the 2020 census, and he realized that he was going to have an uphill battle to win again, and he announces his retirement. So he does not run in 2022. He retires from Congress, which, by the way, 5 years in Congress, you then are qualified for retirement pension. So he is now getting a pension if he chose to take it now. He'll get more if he waits later, but I'm not sure what he did there. But let's get into what Mel found. Mel, tell us. Start the story.
All right. So, yeah. So Adam Kinzinger decided to retire on October 21st, 2021. And so, you know, when you're not running for re-election, obviously you're not allowed to raise campaign funds under your principal campaign committee.
Now, but, Mel, is this a law or is this a rule?
That's a rule, right. As far as principal campaign committee. So that's the main one. That's the one that everybody thinks of. If you follow me on Twitter, last week I put out a thread explaining what other campaign committees, our candidates use. They use things called joint fundraising committees, and they use things called leadership PACs. And leadership PACs, especially now, those are allowed to be used by anyone who has held public office, plans to hold public office, and also who does hold public office. And you're allowed to raise funds in your leadership PAC under the auspices of you are going to, you know, help get people who align with you elected.
Other right? candidates, other candidates that
right,
you agree
other
with.
Candidates. Yeah. Right. But there's no law saying how much of the money that you raise in that leadership PAC you have to give to other people.
So
right?
he announces his retirement in 2021, October, mm-hmm. and then he continues to raise money, but he does it right. under this leadership PAC. Is that correct?
Correct. Yep. So he had one joint fundraising committee. He had one leadership PAC before 2021. In 2021, in January 2021, he opened a second leadership PAC, or excuse me, a second joint fundraising committee, right? Now, joint fundraising committees are committees that candidates will join. So they'll have like a group of the candidates get together. And it's so...
Is that money commingled and then they make a decision on who they're supporting or where mm-hmm. they're spending the money at that point?
Correct.
But,
yeah.
that, this but is the leadership, the leadership would be sole discretion of that candidate or former politician.
Correct. The leadership PAC is an unconnected PAC, so they're not allowed to put their names on the PAC. And in exchange, it's kind of treated like it's not the same as the other connected PACs. It okay. gets complicated. Yeah. It does. And it's the reason why they love these things so much, because it's hard for people to follow. But so he had this joint fundraising committee, and they always like the joint fundraising committees because people are allowed to write really big checks to them, right? If a candidate has a their party's committee on their joint fundraising campaign or committee, then they're allowed to collect the max amount for every person in their party's committee. So you get $6,600 total, $3,300 for the primary, $3,300 for the general. But if you've got, you know, 200 people in that party committee, now you can collect in just your joint fundraising committee $6,600 for each and every one of those 200 other members. Does that make sense?
It does. Yes.
Okay. So they usually, so a lot of them will have more than one joint fundraising committee, but he opens a second joint fundraising committee. So now he's got four. And this was early 2021. He's got one leadership PAC, two JFCs, and then his primary campaign.
This was all prior to him announcing his retirement
exactly.
in
mm-hmm.
October of 2021. So at this point, it could be legitimate that he was going to run for office.
Could be.
Okay.
He knew the lines were getting redrawn,
yeah.
but he was also milking the whole January 6th thing.
Well,
right?
That's what I was going to get to, because July 2021 is when the public hearings started for mm-hmm. the January 6th, quote, insurrection, unquote. And he was a big part of that. He and Liz Cheney mm-hmm. were the two Republicans on that committee. So keep the story going. Let's see what we can make of this.
Okay, so now flash forward, October 29th, 2021, he announces he's going to retire. Immediately, all fundraising for his principal campaign is cut off. He's not allowed to, if you're not running, you're not allowed to raise any more money. 10 days later, he converts that joint fundraising committee that he had just opened in January, he converts it into a leadership pack.
Okay. And that's the one that he has discretion over.
Correct.
Okay.
So now he starts raising incredible amounts of money.
How much had he raised typically? He was there for 10 mm-hmm. years. What would be normal for Adam Kinzinger?
So the most he had ever raised across all of his packs was $2.45 million.
And in
he
a
raised
cycle? That. Was that in a cycle?
In a cycle. Okay. Uh-huh. Yep, and that was in 2020.
Okay, so for a two-year cycle, the most he ever raised was about $2.5 million.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And the most he had ever spent was $2.5 million. Yep, so about the same. And that was in 2018. He had a primary challenge in 2018. So, okay. Which is still a ridiculous amount of money considering how, you know, I've looked at how much his challengers across the years have spent. He never had to spend that much money. But as far as Congress goes,
that's a lot of money.
It wasn't super, super excessive. Like yeah. I've seen people in, you know, like Adam Schiff spent, you know, $17 million to get reelected in 2022. So,
and also I would point out in 20, it was really the money coming in was going back out. So there maybe is nothing to question there, right?
Right. Yeah. I wasn't even concerned about that at all. I just kind of hand waved it away. Nothing about that caught my attention. But so now flash forward to 2022 and he's not running for reelection, but all of a sudden his donations, his receipts, they go through the roof and total across all four of those committees that he had, his principal, his joint fundraising, and then his two leadership packs, he raised $6.7 million
in 2022. In 2022. In 1 year, in the year after he announced he was no longer going to be a mm-hmm. candidate, he raised $6.5 million when the most he had ever raised prior to that in a two-year cycle was $2.5 million. So there's Correct. An additional $4 million. The only thing different about Adam Kinzinger in 2021 and 22 was he was a member of the J6 committee.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Do we know where that money came from, that $6.5 million?
A lot of Democrats. I've dug in, to be quite honest with you, I was kind of just so flabbergasted with the spending that I didn't focus quite as hard on the receipts.
It would be interesting to know exactly where all of that money came from. They're giving it to a guy who is no longer going to be in Congress, and
Correct.
It's three times the amount he's ever raised in a two-year cycle, and he does this in 1 year, and it happens to be the year that he is on the J6 committee. But now let's get into the expenditures, because that is interesting, and really, in a lot of ways, it seems like he broke rules. And again, I'm going to say it's rules because these aren't laws, which gets into another conversation about election reform and what our politicians and candidates should be allowed to spend money on, and which is, I know, a huge thing for you. It's a big motivation and a passion of yours. So let's get into the expenditures. What did he spend money on?
First thing that'll jump out at you is he spent almost $12,000 renting an aircraft hangar. He has his own little plane, and so he had his campaign paying for his aircraft hangar to store it.
Of course. That makes sense.
Of course, right? Why not? He started reimbursing himself airfare mileage for the miles he had flown his own plane.
Do you know where he flew that plane? Was it back and forth to Washington, D.C., or was it, where was it?
Who knows? Doesn't tell us. It just says in 2022, he reimbursed himself across all of his committees. Let's see, 4, 6, almost $8,000
for airplane travel on his own airplane.
On his own airplane.
Okay.
But then he also reimburses himself another $15,000 in mileage reimbursement to his car.
Yeah.
Okay. So
We all get to do that, right?
Yeah. And then, but then right before he leaves office, he spends $20,000 on a campaign car. So now there is some confusion about whether or not, because he bought a campaign car in 2020 with his committee, and he's allowed to do that with his regular committee. And then, so I thought he had bought a second car for his leadership pack, but it turns out that he actually used his leadership pack to buy the car from his primary, which okay. I can't find any rules whether or not that's allowed.
So he bought the car. He just moved the car from.
He moved okay. the car to, but then he starts reimbursing himself in 2023 using his leadership pack to the tune of like $15,000 for mileage on
Is that his car or his plane?
Nope. No, he's also got plane mileage, miles, but he spent, he reimburses himself $12,000 in 2023 for car miles and another, $22,000 for airfare miles.
Yeah. And that's his own airplane. And again, he is no longer a candidate, but he is spending the money that he generated in 2021 and 2022 mm-hmm. when he was on the January 6th committee, which again was $6.5 million compared to $2.5 million when he actually was a candidate. That is interesting, mm-hmm. isn't it?
It is. Yep. So yeah, he's like I said, he paid himself $21,000 for airfare mileage reimbursement in this is just 1 year, 2023. Oh, and he also spent $61,000 on regular airfare.
That's a lot of flying. These politicians, I remember when we talked about Letitia James, I forget the number. It was close to $100,000.
It's crazy.
Yeah. These people fly like crazy.
Supposedly.
Allegedly. Yeah, right.
Yeah, we don't ever get to see the actual raw receipts from United.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Let's see. Then he's got in at the very end of 2022, he decides to buy himself a $25,000 membership to the Capitol Hill Club.
That's important.
That is important because he used his primary campaign to purchase that membership. And the rules are very, very clear on that. You are not allowed to use your campaign funds to buy a membership to a private club unless you are holding a fundraising event at that club, and you have to have a membership. Well, the thing is that he used his primary campaign where he was no longer fundraising to pay for this membership 20 days before he left office. There were no fundraising events because he's not allowed to fundraise using that campaign anymore.
Yeah. So he knew what he was doing. He was emptying out that account, paying for something uh-huh. that he wanted to buy, even though he wasn't going to do a fundraiser, which according mm-hmm. to the rules, you have to do. I follow that. Unfortunately, there is no accountability, is there?
None whatsoever. He spent $40,000 buying his way into the former Members of Congress Club, which again, I'm like, a $40,000 membership due, that seems extremely excessive.
Yeah.
It's
not their money. It's excessive for me and you and anyone listening to this right now. But when you're spending other people's money like they do in Congress, the dollar figure doesn't ever matter, does it?
It's just, it's outrageous. And because we allow them to do this, of course, there's, you know, the only people that can actually change this are the people who are directly benefiting from these, this scam.
Yeah, good
So there's no motivation on their side, right. you know?
Yeah, they live off this money forever.
They do.
He raised $6.5 million in a year that he wasn't going to campaign, not even running for office. And that money can be used for travel, food, mm-hmm. really for the rest of his life. So he's pretty well set. So the objective then for any of us would seem to be run for office, win, and your life is set and probably creates generational wealth.
absolutely. You know, it's the $70,000 in catering. It's the $50,000 in hotels. It's, you know, like it's the consultants, which again, yeah. You know, we know the consultancy thing is a scam, you know,
I'm on Travelocity trying to get La Quinta down from 139 a night down to 119.
Exactly, and they're spending
$50,000 on a hotel. They aren't real Americans, are they?
No, I mean they're scumbags. They are crooks, you know.
Do you think they are going in, or do you think that is what they become?
I think that there is a certain personality trait that seems to excel in politics, mm-hmm. that I think a lot of honest people go into politics
and then
they just are so disgusted that the good ones, they end up just getting disgusted and leaving.
They quit, right.
Yeah. And then the people who are comfortable with
the game that's played.
They're the ones that end up, you know, with the longevity. I mean, you have a handful of really good people, you know, who don't ever pull this crap. But unfortunately, that number it's not nearly as big as
it's not enough, is it? Because if it was enough, I don't think our country would be sitting where it is right now. And unfortunately, we are. And we are because we have a failed, corrupt government at every level. And that's what mm-hmm. we're dealing with in America. And somehow, some way, we have to figure out a way to make it a government for the people, by the people, of the people again, because it clearly is not. And Mel, thank you again. It's always a pleasure to speak with you. You do great work. Keep it coming. Keep digging and keep coming back.
Awesome. Thank you so much for having me.
More truth in minutes on America Out Loud Talk Radio.
World-class care from doctors you can trust, all from the comfort of your home. That is One Wellness. Dr. Peter McCullough and his team at The Wellness Company launched the One Wellness membership to provide free monthly supplements and unlimited telemedicine access with doctors that share your values. The Wellness Company's chief medical board designed every supplement and medical protocol with your health in mind. From groundbreaking supplements like the Spike Support Formula to unique care like Freedom from Big Pharma. Join a healthcare system that puts your health and well-being above the interest of Big Pharma's bottom line. It's the way healthcare should be, with a company that shares your values. Go to OutLoudCare.com today and use code OUTLOUD for 25% off your first month of One Wellness.
Cardiovascular disease is the leading cause of death and disability. Today's high-stress, on-the-go lifestyle makes it hard to stay heart healthy. Lifestyle changes like exercise and diet are critical, but you can also support your heart with concentrated nutrients. Healthy Cell created Heart and Vascular Health to support three aspects of heart health: cholesterol, blood pressure, and triglycerides, with CoQ10, vitamin K2, resveratrol, and soluble fiber. And Healthy Cell's not a pill. It's a patent-pending gel you swallow with ultra-absorption of science-backed ingredients. You would need to take 13 pills to get the same amount of nutrients in each gel pack. And these great-tasting gels come in a small packet. Tear off the top, shoot it down, or mix it in water. Get heart healthy. Go to HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for 25% off your first order. HealthyCell.com, code OUTLOUD for 25% off.
You've all heard Dr. McCullough and others share over and over the value of keeping your sinuses cleansed. It's a smart move all year, but even more so when we're cooped up inside. It's not really open for debate any longer. Those that live smart and live well pay attention to nasal and oral hygiene. Cofix RX has just the tools for the job with our nasal and throat cleanse. Click the Cofix RX banner on AmericaOutloud.shop to get 20% off your entire order. That's right, AmericaOutloud.shop. Use coupon code OUTLOUD. That's coupon code OUTLOUD for 20% off your entire order.
Use Cofix RX because it works.
I happened to catch Lieutenant Joe's show the other day. He does a great job. If you haven't heard him yet, tune in Monday through Friday, 1 p.m. Eastern Time, right here on America Out Loud Talk Radio. And then at 3 o'clock, it's Tom Renz, and at 4, it is the Constitution Study with Paul Engle. While you're here, go to AmericaOutloud.news, check out the shop, use the promo code OUTLOUD to get up to a 25% discount on some of the items there. My name is Booker Scott. This is The Truth Be Told, and I hear a lot of you talk from time to time that we are living in biblical prophecy times, and this could be the end. We are living in those end times. So I wanted to get someone that could answer some of those questions for us. It's above my pay grade. Again, I know most things are above my pay grade at this time. I'm going to bring in now my pastor. He is senior pastor at Calvary Church in Clearwater, Florida. Happens to be my pastor. I'm not sure what we call him, if it's Dr. Rice, Willie Rice, Pastor Rice, but he's here to join us. I'm not sure what to call him.
Just anything will do. God, it's an honor to be with you, and thank you for the privilege.
Yes, sir. And you heard me talking there about all the things that we see, and people are, they have this fear. And I don't know that it's a fear, but some people relax and think, okay, well, Jesus is coming back any minute. And in World War I, in World War II, even back to the Civil War, every time there's something happening in our country or in the world, people go to the book of Revelations and think, okay, these are the end times. And I know listening to, by the way, Willie Rice here did a series on Revelations last year. It was, I think, 8-10 sermons, and it was a great job. I am intimidated by Revelations, but he made it where I'm not so intimidated anymore. He made it real simple, because a lot of times he will say, I just don't know the answer, so let's go to the Bible. Pastor Rice, what does the Bible say?
Well, it says a lot, and thanks for the kind words. Hey, this is a question that has, Scott, been asked for a long time. This is not a new question. This is not a question that we're the first generation to ask. In fact, they ask it, obviously, in biblical times, and maybe particularly pertinent to us as they ask it of Jesus. His own disciples ask him this question. They ask him, it was one of the big questions they ask him, even the time immediately leading up to his death, going to the cross, they ask a question about, there was a day they walked into the temple, which would have been the largest structure any of them had ever seen. So if we can think of one of the most impressive buildings you've ever seen, and Jesus said, but I'm telling you, the day's coming there's not going to be one rock upon another. In other words, this building is going to be demolished. So you can imagine, like in the United States, if someone said that about the White House or the Capitol or
the Dallas Cowboys Stadium,
whatever is the biggest, most extraordinary, and not just that, but the most important edifice in an entire culture. This was the most important building these guys had ever seen. Yeah, Jesus is saying, the day's coming, this will be gone. And then they ask a question, well, when is this going to happen? And Jesus launched into what is known as the Olivet Discourse, which is a long sermon about things that are going to come. It's one of those sermons that it's often quoted and stories are pulled from. My point is simply, this is not a new question. You see it when Jesus, after his resurrection, before he leaves, the disciples said, are you now going to restore the kingdom? In other words, this is the Christian belief that Jesus died, was buried, rose again from the dead, that he is the Lord who can make us right with God. This is what Christianity is. And Jesus, and after that all happened, they said, okay, is it time for the credits to roll and the music to play and everybody goes home happy? You know, is this the end? Are you now going to establish a kingdom on the earth? And Jesus said, it is not for you to know the time or the hour, but here's what you are to do. And then he gave them a job to be witnesses of the Christian gospel to the ends of the earth. So my point in telling those stories is that you go into the Bible, this story has been asked from ancient time. What does the future hold? When does the world come to an end? What does it look like? You know, and how can I be on the right side of it? This is a question that's been around a long, long time.
You know, I profess to be the dumbest person on the World Wide Web. And I
doubt that's true, but
I think I have an ability to kind of dumb things down sometimes. And I look at end times for me, and I really feel like I've been living in them since I took my first breath. And I say that because life expectancy is 78 years. And so I've got 70, 75 years. So if end times are going to last all of these years and we're in them right now, how is that really going to affect my life and how should it?
Well, because eventually our life does end. What you just said. I mean, there is an end to this existence. It's teleological in that it is moving toward an end. And everyone knows this. I mean, if we're talking to somebody, there may be a listener, for instance, who isn't even sure about the whole Christianity thing or not even sure about the existence of God. And yet they acknowledge that their life is going to end. You know, there's going to be an end. You look at the universe and you see that energy moves from order to disorder. You know that something, it seems, you know, that there seems to have been a beginning and at least some type of an end. So, the reality is we all, you know, we think about the future. We want to be prepared for the future. We do all kinds of things to prepare for possible contingencies. Like we buy insurance in case there's a fire or a flood or someone breaks in or something happens, because we know those things could in fact happen. Well, what we know will in fact happen is that our lives will come to an end. And it seems logical to believe that at some point, the world as we know it would end. Now, that doesn't mean we're walking around with some crazy sign predicting that it's going to happen the day after tomorrow. That quickly gets into a crazy territory. And by the way, Jesus himself said that. You're not going to know when this is going to happen. But the reality is, you know what? It is arrogant and presumptuous to think there won't be an end. And so I think wise people go, you know what? I need to be ready for that.
And be ready right now and today for that to happen, because it could happen for any of us at the end. And guess what? That was your end time. And so for, yeah, and really that's how you live your life. And I really believe that as one matures in their spirituality and their walk, their question becomes more of what can I do to help? And not so much of begging and a hopium prayer. I was really brought up in a hopium prayer type of culture. When you look around socially at this country, and I'm going to stay away from politics. I told you I would, and I'm going to. But I know that you are never afraid, really, to address social issues from the pulpit. And I like that about you when it comes to biblical things. And
yeah.
Do you feel like there's an opportunity for this country to have revival, to have a turn, to repent? And because one theme that keeps recurring on our show is that every guest, whether it's someone like Julie Kelly or Juanita Broderick, Michael Johns, Corey Mills, Joseph McBride, the attorney, all of them come back to God. And none of them are like you. They're not a pastor. They're not a preacher. They're secular people in this country that are fighting for this country. And they all say that. We look at Amherst College in Kentucky that had a revival of their own, and they kept politics completely out of it. And it was fabulous to see. Is that possible in this country, the way things are socially right now?
Well, that's a great question. I the short answer would be, of course, it's possible. With God, all things are possible. And we have seen spiritual awakenings that have happened before. You can, in fact, in many ways, when you look at the history of America, you are looking at the product of religious faith and religious fervor, call it revival, renewal. No one could be a student of American history, whether they're a believer or not a believer, who is not aware of the great awakenings that occurred in America, where it helped shape who we are as a people and influence the type of government that we have. And created the kind of people that could function within that government. many of our founding fathers acknowledged that our government, that is a government that is necessarily limited in order to guard the liberties of the people, could only function if you have a people who govern themselves reasonably well. Mm-hmm. And the only thing that governs the human heart, when you look at it, is this idea of moral truth, moral virtue, and ultimately it is going to come back to religious conviction, which is why there are many people, serious people, who would be historians or scholars. They may not necessarily be Christians. They might disagree with my conviction that Jesus is divine, that he died on the cross for our sins and was raised again that we might be made right with God. They might question that, but they would nevertheless look at the foundations of our country, the religious foundations of our country, and say, without those, you don't have America. And I would say, without those, you don't even have Western civilization. It is the bedrock for the human liberties and the freedoms that we enjoy. So, to your question, can there be a spiritual renewal? With God, all things are possible, and we have seen spiritual renewals happen before. However, you know, so that's one answer. The second answer I would say, and you talk about what your guests have reinforced in past interviews, and I would just say this: without a spiritual renewal, I mean, without a deep spiritual renewal, I think the future would be very bleak for Western civilization. We have imploded some of our foundations. We have bought into ideologies. This is not about left or right politically. Amen. Or a midpoint between two extremes. That is not necessarily where the truth lies. Sometimes the truth does lie in a balance between two extremes, but not always. It's not about some point on some imaginary continuum. It's about whether or not you have a true and accurate view of reality and who and what human beings are. And what we are seeing is, in Carl Truman's words, for instance, you have had a complete reordering of how we understand truth and how we understand human identity. And that is the genesis, the foundation of all the strange social battles we have, from the LGBTQ, sexual identity, transgender, all these movements that are hot button issues. It's not simply about arguing whether you should draw the line here or whether you should draw the line there. The argument is now about whether or not there is such a line at all. Mm-hmm. And who and why you would even draw such a line. So Carl Truman talks about the fact that we now get our identity from something other than this idea of God and transcendent truth or natural law. We now get it from, you know, how we feel. It's very subjective. And that has become the genesis to many of the social ills in our country. So I do not, that's a long answer to say, I do not see much hope in simply political movements. I think we ought to work for political movements that are grounded in truth and in solid conviction. The world would be an immeasurably better place if we were to embrace certain things that are right and reject certain things that are wrong. But unless there is a groundswell, and maybe by groundswell underneath the ground, unless there is a movement in the hearts of society, the future looks very bleak.
And Pastor Rice, if you could just hold that thought there. We're going to get into more of this conversation here in just a minute. You are listening to The Truth Be Told here on America Out Loud Talk Radio. And make sure you go to AmericaOutLoud.news. And when you're there, go to the shop. Inside that shop, you'll find Heal Right. These are metabolic micronutrient health bars. They taste fantastic. There's four different flavors. I'm eating them now. You eat one a day. And what it does, it prevents bad things from happening to you in the future with your health. It lowers your cholesterol, your blood sugar. It helps with weight management. And all you have to do is eat the bar. It's 15 years worth of incredible research that has gone into this. And these things work. They're working for me. They can work for you. Join me on this health journey. Check out Heal Right. go to HillWright.com, start healing from within. You can also go to AmericaOutloud.news, go in the shop, use the promo code OUTLOUD, and you'll get a 20% discount.
More truth in minutes on America Out Loud Talk Radio.
Many voices, one freedom, united in the First Amendment. Our goal is to herald the voice of genuine liberty at AmericaOutloud.news, a place where you'll find the naked truth expressed with a patriotic heart. Now is our time, my fellow Americans. America Out Loud Talk Radio. Liberty and justice for all.
Cholesterol, blood pressure, blood sugar, inflammation, and weight. These are all real-world problems that 87% of Americans are struggling with. Fight back with Heal Right. Heal Right is a bar you eat, but it's food as medicine that addresses the nutritional root cause of health issues in just 8 weeks. Take action today. Visit healright.com/outloud or americaoutloud.shop and use the code OUTLOUD for 20% off.
I'm so confused. I don't know what to do.
I'm afraid of going to the hospital.
My doctor tells me nutrition doesn't work.
Trust is earned. We are the Energetic Health Institute, and we want to earn your trust. Natural medicine, holistic nutrition, detoxification, fasting, cellular healing, and so much more. Remember, the best way to be free is to be healthy. So stop being a patient and start being a student at energetichealthinstitute.org.
Don't accept joint aches and stiffness as part of aging. Doctors at Advanced Nutrition Company, Healthy Cell, created joint health and mobility to support connective tissue, joint lubrication, and reduce joint irritation with curcumin, omega-3, chondroitin, glucosamine, and hyaluronic acid for joint comfort and flexibility. And Healthy Cell's not a pill. It's a gel you swallow. Get 100% drug-free joint support. Go to HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for 25% off your first order. That's HealthyCell.com. Code out loud.
Every night at 9 o'clock, Monday through Friday, it is After Dark with Robin Andrew. At 8 o'clock, it is the National Security Hour. And coming up here in just a few minutes, it's going to be Unleashed, the Political News Hour. Stick around for that. We are in the middle of a conversation with Dr. Willie Rice, Pastor Willie Rice, my pastor, from the Calvary Church in Clearwater, Florida. Just before the break, he mentioned about Karl Marx, and as we look around this country and the world, it seems upside down, and it's a scary time. It really is. I know it is. Are these the end times? I don't know, but we're going to continue this conversation now with Dr. Rice. And Pastor, I would love for you to be able to give the audience, the listeners here, some hope.
Well, first of all, I do think there's great hope because God is, those of us who are Christians believe that there is one who is in control of history, that history is not spinning out of control, and that our movement is not, and I'm speaking here of those who are followers of Jesus, it is not in the hands of societal majorities, but it is in the hands of a sovereign God. So yes, that is the whole message of the book of Revelation, by the way, that you are going to be facing these extraordinary battles and difficulties. And yet, if we are faithful, the outcome is not in doubt. So to me, the hope is rooted in the Christian gospel and in the belief that the Lamb, that's a symbol used in the book of Revelation for Jesus, in fact, overcomes. I do want to say, you know, so that to me is the most important message. I do agree that what you are seeing is a kind of neo-Marxism. Maybe it's beyond even neo. It's a third or fourth generation materialism that has now manifested itself in this identity politics that is now consuming our culture. As some have theorized, Marx saw that and believed that there was going to be an uprising of the working class against the owner class. And when that didn't happen, that there were a number of, you know, sociologists, philosophers, thinkers who began to re-envision society in a different kind of way. It wasn't just based on whether you are an owner or a worker. Now oppression became redefined. And that is where we get into the critical theory and intersectionality that is so prominent today and that is impacting us in ways that I think a lot of people in our culture don't even really fully understand. They don't understand, where did this transgender thing come from? Mm-hmm. Like, it came out of nowhere. Well, it didn't come out of nowhere. It was inevitable. And now looking back, you know, you could have easily predicted 25, 30 years ago, the trajectory we're on. We're just stunned at the pace of it. And it's going to continue because this isn't simply about, well, if you could vote person A over person B. This is an underlying ideology that has been embraced by America that is a fundamental rejection of the ideological framework that formed the West. And it is a fundamental rejection of the ideological framework that comes out of the Judeo-Christian worldview. It is a rejection of that worldview, and it is a reordering of reality so that there will continue to be letters added, LGBTQIA2+, and so forth. There are going to be any number of letters added, because now we have redefined reality, and now politics has become this identity politics. So I just want to say, one, you're absolutely right in seeing this as a pernicious and dangerous trend that we are on. We are moving in a perilous direction. But is there hope? Yes, because I can't promise you that the West survives or American culture survives as we have known it. I hope it does. I want it to. I have six grandchildren. I hope it does. But I can absolutely promise you that the gospel of Jesus Christ will prevail and triumph in the end of time. So is there hope? There's hope when you put your faith in God.
And I think that's a great answer. And one thing I wanted to do when you joined the conversation was, because I know you're not going to talk about it, but a couple of things. I want to share that my mom has been really, really sick. She came to visit me, had a problem, took her to the emergency room for 3 weeks now. She has been in the hospital, back to the hospital, rehab, and that's where she is now. But one of the elders of her church flew down yesterday morning and brought hugs and cards and flew back home yesterday. And I just messaged him and I said, thank you for being Christ-like. And you know, Christianity can be displayed in so many different ways. And I know that one of the things that you are trying to do in through the church in Clearwater is plant more churches. It's something that you've been doing now for about 7 years. I think you're up to 123 churches. So please tell people a little bit about that.
Well, that's just part of the strategic vision of our church, which was, heard somebody say, a friend of mine, Mark Vance in Iowa, who's a pastor of a very great church. And I heard him say something and it just caught me. He said, we realized there had to be a bigger vision than just one big church getting bigger or one mega church getting marginally better. We needed to be about a movement that was about multiplication. And that kind of realigned our strategic initiative at our church, that while we want to continue to make as big an impact as we possibly can in our community and need to do much more, we're not in anywhere close to doing everything we need to do. We also wanted to plant and invest in helping other churches. So we've at least had a role in it, planting many churches over these last 7 years. And because we do believe that the hope of the world is in a message that is beyond this world. The kinds of things you're talking about today and that your listeners are no doubt intrigued by is that the world is broken. You look around and you can see brokenness. There's brokenness in politics, but it's not just politics. And it's not just the people that you disagree with politically. There's brokenness everywhere. There's evil. There's something. One of the reasons I believe the Christian gospel is it makes the best sense of the world. You look at the world and you know that it is beautiful. There is order. There's creation. It's not haphazard. There is enormous beauty and order. It gives evidence of a design, of a creator. And yet, it is also broken. There's evil. People do awful things. And there's brokenness on the inside of us. The Bible makes perfect sense of this because God made the world and it was good. And it gives evidence that there is a designer behind it all. And yet, something has gone terribly wrong. What has gone wrong? The Bible answer to that is sin. And the solution is that God is in the process of making all things new. And this is the message of the gospel, that in Jesus, God will make all things new. So that is why those of us who are followers of Jesus put our hope in him. And if you say, well, I'm not there yet, it's absolutely fine. I'm so grateful you're listening. But here's my point. The world is broken. You do acknowledge that. And where is the hope? Do you really believe in a political solution? And by the way, there are people on this is what the political left absolutely believes, that if you just had enough people, the right philosophy, and you gave them enough power.
And enough money.
And enough money, that they would create a utopia. This is what Marxism and communism believes. And honestly, on the other side, it's what a fascist government believes. Totalitarians on either side believe that if they were in charge, things would be better. And totalitarian systems do not work. They do not work. The left is more insidious because it uses this idea of fairness and equity, and this idea if you gave these people enough power and money, they would fix everything. Does anyone really believe that? Has it ever worked?
Well, it
hasn't even come close to working. The more any politician tells you they can create utopia, the more you want to run from them, because those have been the worst tyrants in world history. So Christians believe the answer has got to lie outside human spectrum. We need the truth of God, and we need the hope of God.
You know, I'm pretty vocal on social media, and I don't shy away from my Christianity, and it's really why I do so much social media. And I put a tweet out the other night, and it was really simple. It was love God and love each other with a picture of nature. And that has so much to do with the gospel, and so many people don't even realize it. You know, if the world was that simple, which it can be, what would it be like?
That goes right back to Jesus, as you know, who, when he was asked, what's the most important law? And he said, you can summarize the entire law. And he was talking about all the moral truths that had been given to the Jewish people, which, by the way, stood the test of time. That worldview is a worldview upon which modern civilization has been built. The rights of man have come about in that soil. Now, when Jesus looked at that great body of moral truth, he said, the first command is to love God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength. And the second is just like it, meaning just as important. Just it goes along with it. Love your neighbor as yourself. This is the essence of the Christian message. Now, it needs to be fleshed out. What does it mean to love God? What does it mean to love others? And we will spend our life pursuing that on deeper levels. But that is ultimately what it comes down to. Yes. I've said this many times one of the things you do as a pastor is you do a lot of funerals, and I've done a lot of funerals, and I said it comes down to the same thing for everybody. I seldom read their resume, maybe for a minute or two. If they did a lot, like they landed on the moon or something, then you might speak something. You know, if you did a lot, you know, you talk about that, but you'd talk about it in a few minutes. For everybody, it really comes down to your relationships with your family, your friends, and your faith. It comes down to God and others. That's what matters at the end. And that's what you're getting at there. That's where our hope lies, is to understand the love of God and to learn to love others.
I think that's a great way to end this half hour. We've been talking to Dr. Pastor Willie Rice, my pastor at the Calvary Church in Clearwater, Florida. Thank you so much for making the time. I know you're busy, so thank you.
It's been a great joy. Appreciate the privilege.
And again, that is my pastor, Dr. Pastor Willie Rice of Calvary Church in Clearwater, Florida. You can join his sermons on Sunday mornings at 10:45. Just find them online. It's easy to do. Calvary Church, Clearwater, Florida. A lot of scary things going on in the world, and, you know, many consider what we're living through as a war. And whether you see it as good versus evil or left versus right, conservative versus liberal, Republican versus Democrat, whatever it is, warfare may be a good way to consider what we're doing, what we're living in. If you happen to have a biblical worldview, then nothing we see makes any sense anymore. If you happen to believe the Bible is a fairy tale and being a Christian, Catholic, or Jew is a bad thing, it's just a silly thing, then everything held as sacred or important to the former group is called just stupid by the latter. William Lind, a military writer and former aide in Congress, he's written about war for years, 40 years in fact. In his book, Fourth Generation Warfare, he writes this: at the heart of this phenomenon, fourth generation war, lies not a military evolution, but a political, social, and moral revolution, a crisis of legitimacy of the state. All over the world, citizens of states are transferring their primary allegiance away from state to other entities, to tribes, ethnic groups, religions, gangs, ideologies, and causes. Many people who will no longer fight for their state are willing to fight for their new primary loyalty. That's interesting, isn't it? Don't you see that here in America? We can see this here and all over the world. We see coordinated efforts of groups to rise up against American institutions as soon as their group doesn't get their way. How loyal to the country are the Hamas protesters on college campuses? How loyal to America are the Green New Deal activists that tried to destroy the American Constitution recently? The fourth generation war, it's hard. Discernment is key. Knowledge and wisdom are paramount. You and me, we're loyal to the country. We pledge our allegiance to one flag under God with liberty and justice for all. While our enemies may not understand us and think we're stupid, it's still our right today. And that's the battle or war we wage. I'm happy to be fighting alongside you in this fourth generation war for truth and justice. My name is Booker Scott. Over 2,000 years ago, you were told you are the salt of the earth. And salt without flavor, it has no value. So keep being salty. Have a great night.
There is only one truth. You've been listening to The Truth Be Told with Booker Scott on America Out Loud.